Well, this morning, as we go through our series on handling the ups and downs of life, we're going to be focusing this morning on Psalm 139. And if you have your Bibles, you're welcome to turn there. If not, I think we're going to have the script up there for you here in a moment. But it's an interesting psalm. It's we talked about Psalm 23 last week, and I'm just kind of cherry-picking some of the psalms that are in some ways the most, I think, the most beautiful, most poetic, most reassuring that we have. And, you know, when you're going through difficulty or challenges or whatever it is, the handling the ups and downs of life, to open up the psalms, it's meant to be a prayer book. That's really what it was. It was a prayer book, a song book, a hymn book, a chorus book in many ways. And it's a way of us saying, you know what, God, I want to communicate with you. I want to engage you. Over the years as a pastor, there's been times where I've had people, say to me, and they've come to a church that I've been at or heard speaking, they say, I've kind of been familiar with church, or I've known about God, but he always seemed very, very far and removed. And you're talking about a personal relationship with God. That's very different than just kind of the man upstairs or this great creator or the great architect of the universe, whatever it might be, that kind of concept. It's like, God, you're right here. You're with us. And, when you can page through the Bible and you can't actually see the words personal relationship with God or with Jesus written in there. But what you can see when you read the Psalms is that it's totally true. That guys like David, who wrote this song, engaged with God on a very, very personal level. And God invites us to do that. And I think what this psalm does is really balance or look at that whole idea of God in his omnipotence. That's his power, omni, kind of all, God of all power, omnipotence, and his omniscience and his omnipresence, which is like his all-knowing knowledge and his presence with us. So they're kind of big theological words for it, but it's really talking about that. It's talking about this God who wants a warm, honest, real relationship with us. And so that's what I've entitled this morning's sermon. I've just entitled it, How to Have a Real Relationship with God. How to make it true and authentic. How to make it with no barriers, just God, it's wide open. And to have anything less than that is really, is missing out in life. It's going through life like, I don't know, it's like with a black and white TV as opposed to a flat screen, HD, full color. It's just that difference. It's really getting to know the source and the person behind all of what we experience in life. So I'm going to read it for you here from Psalm 139. We'll go through the first 12 verses. We'll kind of take it chunk by chunk. And it's a little bit longer than some of the other psalms we've looked at. But I think each one just has something really for us this morning. So it says, O Lord, you have examined my heart and you know everything about me. You know when I sit down or stand up. You know my thoughts even when I'm far away. You see me when I travel and when I rest at home. You know everything I do. You know what I am going to say even before I say it, Lord. You go before me and follow me. You place your hand of blessing on my head. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too great for me to understand. I can never escape from your spirit. I can never get away from your presence. If I go up to the heaven, you are there. If I go down to the grave, you are there. If I ride the wings of the morning, if I dwell by the farthest oceans, even there, your hand will guide me and your strength will support me. I could ask the darkness to hide me and the light around me to become night, but even in darkness, I cannot hide from you. To you, the night shines as bright as day. Darkness and light are the same to you. Quite the lines about God and him knowing everything about us. This is just a line after line saying, it's this vertical, I can go side to side, I can go up and down. Wherever I go, God, you are with me. And it talks about everything about me, about the deepest part of us. And it's interesting that we as humans, I think we kind of resist a little bit of that. There's sort of this invasion that we might feel. You know, there's movies made about that all the time, whether it be The Bureau or, Big Brother or Eagle Eye or something like that. There's this whole idea that what if somebody's watching you and knows everything about you? And he's kind of probing that whole thing. And he's saying, actually, there's a God who does. But you know what he's saying? He's saying, you know what, God, the great thing about this is that you place a hand of blessing on my head. You know it, not to be intrusive and invasive and to use it against us, but in fact, when we come to him and we just realize that this is the reality of our lives, there's a God who knows everything about us. He says, I want to bless you. I want to be there for you. I want to strengthen you. So he goes through this everything about me kind of thing. And he says, you know, when I sit down or when I stand up, he's saying, you know what? God knows your habits and routines. And we all have them, don't we? I mean, you can look at your spouse if you're sitting next to a spouse or a good friend. They know that. You've got little routines, little things that you do, little ways you do it. My wife bugs me about how I'll always take, once I've got a route picked out for driving, and I know that that's the quickest route and it's an ongoing route that I'm going to take from A to B, I will always take that. And she's like, let's make it an adventure. Take the other way. Or, you know, and she'll drive and I'll go, why are you going that way? Like, that's not the quickest way. So she knows that there's this routine that I have or these habits. And it might even be what I think is the quickest way. But God knows that about us. He knows our patterns. He knows our idiosyncrasies. He knows everything about it. He knows, it says, he knows when my thoughts, even when I'm far away. Like, and then the psalm goes on to say that God isn't far away. But what it is just this picture of, we've got this idea of God being way out there, but we might think that we're far away from him, but he knows our thoughts. That means he knows our motives. He knows our purposes. He knows our aims. He knows everything about us. And then it says, you see me when I travel. You know when I rest at home. You know everything that I do. He's saying, you know my public, and you know my private life. And he says, you know what I am going to say even before I say it, Lord. Some of us have human relationships where we kind of go, I knew they were going to say that just before they said it. I knew they were going to say that. And, you know, we've got some hunches after we know a person for a while, but God, he actually is able to know that, what we're going to say before we even say it. You go before me and you follow me. So God's just, he's there. And it says, you place your hand of blessing on my head. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too great for me to understand. He says, I start getting a brain cramp when I start thinking about that, because this is just too much. And he says, I can never escape from your spirit. I can never get away from your presence. If I go up to heaven, you are there. Like, you can go to the outer reaches of space. You can go to the depths of the grave, into the earth, whatever it is, you are there. If I ride the wings of the morning, if I dwell at the farthest oceans, even there your hand will guide me and your strength will support me. You know, for those few verses there, you can almost get the sense that David's saying, I might try and escape God. And he's basically saying, you can't outthink God. You can't outrun God. And you know, so oftentimes, I think in our lives, there's this part of us that there's a fear that we might be discovered in our depravity, or at least sometimes in some ways we think, maybe if it's my true self, I'll disappoint someone. And that can give us some anxiety. And so oftentimes as humans, we use words to kind of make it a little bit better, you know, make it look a little better, and we do. We all do that. And I like what Waltke says. He says, words, like nature, half reveal and half conceal the soul, that's capital soul, within. And our words have a way of doing that. Are just how we kind of put up a certain image. But God's saying, you know what, I know all about that in you. And even as David's getting maybe a little bit freaked out by that right here, he says, but really, your hand is there to guide me and your strength will support me. There's the key. God isn't like the Bureau or Big Brother or Eagle, anything like that. God is there because he wants to come alongside of us, to support us and to strengthen us. And when you think about that resource at our disposal, an omnipotent God there to support us and to guide us, it's quite a thought. It's an amazing thought. It's an amazing truth. And we can't be irrational like Adam and Eve, who say, you know what, maybe I can take a tree or some fig leaves or whatever and cover up. I just can't do that. God will know anyhow. And so there is this actual ultimate surrendering to God and his purposes. And it's ultimately the best place we possibly can be. It's not to say that we go through life without difficulty or without challenges or without ups and downs, but there's a sense of confidence that David ultimately comes out with. He says, even in the darkest, deepest, my darkest hour, whatever it might look like, God, you're with me. And he finds a source of strength in that. It's an awesome kind of thing. to come to God and say, you know what, God, you know it about me anyhow. You know, a few years back, I was hit by the wonders of science. Allow science, you know, they can take a scope and push it down your gastrointestinal tract, your GI tract, and look inside. Maybe you've had that done. I happen to have a brother-in-law who was in the market of selling those to hospitals and to doctors, and then I have another brother-in-law who is a doctor and works as an anesthetist. That's a hard word to say. He puts people out so that they can put the scopes down their throats. Okay? But the funny thing is, we were hanging out at the house one day, and all of a sudden he shows up, and he stuck the scope down his throat. I don't know how you do that without a major gag reflex happening, but he didn't put himself out to do it, but he just had it down his throat. And he had the screen there, and he's going, hey, check this out. And we're looking at the screen, and we're checking out the half-eaten French fries in his gut and the chunks of McDonald's. He had eaten McDonald's for supper. And so we were looking at all of that on the, that's kind of gross, isn't it? I can see people kind of getting revolted, but it was fascinating to see that physically what science and doctors can do now is amazing. They can look inside of us and hopefully catch things before they get out of control too, which is a wonderful thing. You know what? God is like that kind of doctor on a much deeper and more intimate level, on a spiritual level. He can look inside of us and he can say, you know what? There might be something going on down there that I know about. You might not even know about, but I can help you with that, and I can guide you. And I'm looking inside of you, and I can also even see what's going on before and behind you. And I'm there to guide you, to help you, if you'll let me scope you, if you will let me examine you. And that's what I've got as a practical kind of response that we can have to God. To have a real relationship with God, we can welcome him to examine us. We can say, God, I just want to open myself up to you. I know that you're for me. And that is fundamental to the whole thing. God, you are for me. Examine me. Know me. I just want to surrender to that. It's an incredible place to come to in life. And then it goes on in the next verses, verse 13. It says, you made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous. How well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion. As I was woven together in the dark of the womb, you saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed. How precious are your thoughts about me, O God. They cannot be numbered. I can't even count them. They outnumber the grains of sand. And when I wake up, you are still with me. You know, the first few verses there talk about that God who is there. And again, through the wonders of science, we get a picture of that, of the baby being formed inside the womb. You can imagine how mind-blowing this is for people, you know, a few thousand years ago, kind of thinking about this. But God's actually there. And it's every bit as mind-blowing for us when we realize that that embryo isn't just a function of nature or something scientific. There's actually a God forming that baby in the womb. And I know for those of you maybe parents here and you've had that privilege of seeing an ultrasound before your child's been born, it's just an incredible, incredible experience. I remember that in my first one. It was just like, wow. I mean, that's how it turned out to be him. And it's an amazing thing. And when you think about it, God's actually, it uses these terms that are familiar to folks back then and familiar to somebody who's like an artist creating something. It says, you knit me together in my mother's womb. I was woven together. It's like God's at work, and he's actually putting together the parts and the pieces of our body. And, you know, science can't explain that, and they know it ultimately. If they're real honest, they can't say, you know what, this is mind-blowing. Yeah, we can explain it, but really we can't. And there's... what it's saying here is there's a God in seclusion in the darkness of the womb putting us together. I mean, it has so many implications for our lives when we realize that we're not a chance of nature. We're actually, there's a creator God who's at work. And what that does, I mean, you think about our self-esteem, our self-image, to think that God actually was at work. Like he put you together, like physically, the way you look. And I know there's so many images portrayed today. You've got to look like this, got to look like that, whatever. But this is saying there's actually an architect, a God who said, this is my work of art. I want you to look that way. That has incredible implications for us. You think about our sexuality, God putting that together and saying, I made you this way, male or female, and the implications of that. And it's an invitation to accept that, to say, you know what, we know that life begins at conception, that God, he was right there at conception, and his heart for us is good. You know, as Christians too, as Christ followers, we say, here it is, and in many parts of the scripture, we say, God's for life, and he actually begins right there in the womb. It says God has a book on us. It says, you saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed. And it's talking about the kind of foreknowledge that God has, that he actually has a book on us. And it goes on to talk about his thoughts for us being so numerous. He's got chapters and he's got pages. He's got whatever you want to visualize that he's thinking about us, and his plans for us, his heart is good for us. Right from conception, his heart for us is good. That's an incredible thing for us to come to that place and say, God, you know what? I know whatever my life is, I don't have to. You find in the Bible when Job gets to his lowest, he curses the day he was born. He actually curses the time he was first conceived. And when we realize that actually life is a gift from God, and that his plans, he knows every day, even the bad days, even the moments. This morning, we had a very interesting thing as a practical outworking of this. Our code, our pass to get into the building this morning didn't work on the one side of the building. And I'm calling the security guard, the security company this morning, and they're saying I need a certain code. And they, you know, I was hitting dead ends wherever I went. And I was like, okay, but I've got to practice what I preach. God knew this was going to happen. He knew we wouldn't get into the building before, you know, about 45 minutes before you came this morning on that side of the building. God knows these things. And, you know, this whole idea of God's foreknowledge and our free will, that can give you a brain cramp as well. We don't have to go down that path. But knowing that somehow God holds that in tension, and he allows us free will, and he's sovereign enough and great enough to give us free will, and he also has a foreknowledge about what is going to happen. And when we look at that from the conception of it being a good God, having good plans for us, working even the bad things out for good, and there are bad things that happen, that can give us an incredible amount of confidence and an incredible reassurance as we go through the challenging days in our book. It's an incredible thing. And God says, you know what? My thoughts of you are so great. When you think about a God, and David unpackages his omnipotence, how great he is in the previous verses. Now he says he's actually thinking about us. He's got the universe that he's working out, but he's actually thinking about us personally. We can have a real personal relationship with God. For those who say, you know what, it's religion, you know, God, you know, it's kind of however you define it, and keep it out there or whatever. Or really you can't define it. God's saying, yeah, you can. This is it. I'm the God who created you, and I am the one who also will guide you every day of your life. And then it goes on to some kind of almost surprising verses. In the next few verses, you go, whoa, where did David go with this? We can read them. It says in verse 19, it says, oh God, if only you would destroy the wicked. Get out of my life, you murderers. They blaspheme you. Your enemies misuse your name. Oh Lord, shouldn't I hate those who hate you? Shouldn't I despise those who oppose you? Yes, I hate them with total hatred, for your enemies are my enemies. You start going, whoa, where did that come from, David? Like, that's pretty passionate. I think where it comes from is that kind of allegiance, that kind of loyalty that God that says, you know what? As I've gotten to know you and how good you are, it's hard for me to even understand. Why are those people against you? Why would they do that? And there's a sort of justice thing that's made into our, that God makes into our, you know, in our image, in his image that's inside of us, where he says, you know what? I'm with God. And there's a bit of a frustration too here, like things aren't the way they were intended and things aren't what they will be yet. And in this time, even wicked and evil people will do things even in the name of God. And it can blow our minds and cause us a great deal of frustration. And it actually can arouse some passion within us. Now, some of us who have been in relationships with people where we know, you know, on a personal level, I mean, we can watch the news and go, why would people do that? You get it a little bit closer and you go, I know that person, and look at what that happened to that person. What an evil, wicked person would do. It starts to get something riled up in us. Look at something as a parent who gets to know their child and then sees something. That starts to do something within us. And depending on your personality, some of us go, you know what? But they're human too, and that is so true. God takes that approach and he says, my plan for each person is good. And if they would choose me, I can bring them that way. But there is something that happens within us. We go, I'm on God's team, and I'm with that person. And like I said, using the analogy on a human level, we go, I'm with that person. And God says, and David's here just kind of committing again. He's saying, I'm pledging allegiance to God's honor again. And I think the more closely we get to know God, just like on a personal level, the more we feel a sense of passion about his honor, about his holiness, about his goodness. And the more we kind of go, no, you've misinterpreted God, or you are abusing his name, or whatever it might be. God says, David here is saying, I'm with you, God. I'm totally with you. And I think as we get to know God, we get a little more of a picture and a view of that again. But in case that brings us to a point of self-righteousness, or we think somehow, you know, I'm immune to even some of God's judgment too, David goes on in the next verses, and these are key. Verse 23 and 24, he says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you. And David's saying, you know what? Yeah, I know there's a lot of things that is an offense to God that goes on in this world. But God, some of what's out there, that's me too. And it's happening inside of me. And he's saying, you know what? I want to be honest with you, God. I have mixed up motives. Some of my motives are not the best. And in a sense, what he's saying is, you know what? My heart isn't completely clear of all those things. He recognizes sin's subtly, the ability to delude even ourselves. And what's great about having a relationship with God is that God actually works in our heart. He cleanses our heart. When we come to him with this kind of a real relationship, he actually kind of just sifts out that stuff. And we're able to, in a more realistic way, follow our heart. You know, there's a lot of people who basically say, you know what, I'm just going my own direction and I'm just following my heart. And there's something good and noble about that. There's also something very dangerous about that. If you recognize that your heart might not be good, it might not be heading in the right direction. And David here recognizes that, and he says, God, point out anything in me that offends you. Point out something. If I'm going the wrong direction, please help me. Sift that out. Work in it. And it takes a humility to do that. I love what James Houston says in his conversation. He says, self-defense only shuts the door upon God's mercy, whereas humility opens us to a deeper self-knowledge, leading in turn to greater intimacy with the lover of our souls. There's a God who loves us and wants to guide us and wants to mix that stuff or pull that stuff out and show us what his heart is. David does that. He puts the mirror in front of himself. And in the midst of a world that seems so messed up, that's the balance, is going, yes, that's wrong. That is such an offense to God. I recognize, yeah, that's me too. That's where my heart goes without him. And then finally, David goes, and lead me along the path of everlasting life. David says, you know what? I just want to ask you, God, to lead me down the right path. And you know, in the midst of kind of all of life's complexities and everything like that, having a real relationship with God, it kind of boils down to that line. It's just saying, God, lead me down the right path, the everlasting path. It's a good word. And when you look at kind of the meaning behind everlasting path, you realize that it's something that's both a quality statement and a quantitative statement. It's like on a quality level, this everlasting path is just so much better. Like I said, it's black and white to full color HD. It's so much better on a quality level. And quantitatively, it's for this life and for eternal life afterwards. I want you to lead me down that path, God. So that's where we end up. At the end of the day, he just concludes the psalm saying, God, I know that my paths could lead to destruction, could lead to pain. But as I kind of recognize and just humbly say, God, you know what? Examine me. Know me. God, I just want to affirm again that your plans were right from the beginning in my life. And we can come back to that again and just kind of rewind, in a sense, and say, God, I know that right from the beginning, you were there. You will always be there with me. I just want to invite you to do that. God, I look around at this world, and yeah, it could cause some passion within me, some of the wrongs that's out there, but oh God, I know my motives too. I know that sometimes I'm mixed up, and I cause pain, and I do stuff. But God, I just want to thank you that you're a merciful God. You're a loving God. You forgive, and you will show me. You will lead me down the right path. I can always get on the right path again with you. It's an incredible poem, an incredible song, and it's a way to have this kind of real relationship with God. We go through that. It might be whether it's consciously or just in a rhythm kind of way in our lives, whether it be morning, night, during the day, God's promise for us is that he will be there. He is going to be this omnipotent and omnipresent, omniscient God who will be there with us. I want to invite you to stand. We'll close with a song, and we'll go out with God's blessing here this morning. God, I just want to thank you that when we read this psalm, we get reminded of your greatness, of this incredible knowledge that you have of this world. We just thank you, God, that nothing surprises you in this life. It doesn't come as a surprise for me. You know. And we just thank you that we can ultimately come to that place as human beings, recognizing that our thoughts aren't your thoughts. Even our levels of understanding of justice aren't on the par with yours. And we come to that humble place, God, where we recognize that we are both amazingly made, and we have incredible value, and we are also not God, and we need you. We need you in our lives, and I just thank you that you will lead us down the right path, that we can go ahead with confidence, whatever decisions that we might have this week. And I pray for each person here, as there's always choices and decisions we make about so many things in life, that you, when we ask you to, will lead us down the everlasting path. We thank you for that, God. In your name, amen. Well, I hope you have a really good week. My family's going to be away for kind of a last kick at the vacation can this summer, this weekend, so we won't be here next Sunday, but I'm so glad Peter's going to be here to continue to give us another message.